Chicago. Looking decidedly unhappy, Thornberry said to Jordan,
Halleck will be sending a team to search this place, she will. And my house up on the lake shore, too, I'll wager.
I should get out of here before they arrive, Jordan said. With a heavy sigh, Thornberry agreed.
That you should. I'm sorry. I'll do my best to get this straightened out.
I appreciate it, Mitch. But for the moment, I've got to find a hideaway.
Paul's in North Dakota on his people's reservation.
Jordan nodded. That might be a good place.
Kind of obvious, though.
With a shrug, Jordan said, I don't know anyone else. All my friends from before our mission to New Earth haven't seen me for nearly 200 years. I can't just suddenly pop in on them.
Jabbing a finger at the phone console on his desk, Thornberry commanded, I'll call Paul Longyear. His personal phone.
Jordan felt nervous. How long will it take for Halleck to get a security team here? This is the United States, of course. They'll have to get a court order before they can start searching the place. But that won't stop them from putting a security cordon around the building that would pick me up as I tried to leave.
Paul's not answering his phone, Thornberry grumbled.
Jordan got to his feet. I'd better be leaving.
Do you have a phone?
Yes, but I'm sure Halleck's people could trace it easily.
Thornberry pushed his chair back and got up, too. Come on up to the roof, then. I'll arrange a private jump jet to fly you to Paul's reservation, and I'll give you a new phone so you can talk with a man, whenever he deigns to answer his damned phone.
It wasn't until the jump jet was nearly at Bismarck that Paul Longyear finally returned Jordan's call. The biologist's lean, dark-eyed face broke into a rare smile once he saw Jordan on his phone's screen.
Jordan! Good to see you.
Jordan couldn't help smiling back at him, but he said, Paul, I'm in a bit of a jam. I need your help.
What's wrong?
As Jordan swiftly outlined his situation, Longyear's expression grew more and more somber.
Separated you from Aditi, he said at last. They can't do that.
They've done it. Halleck is using the fear of alien contact to pursue her own interests, Longyear said tightly.
I'll pick you up at the Bismarck airport.
Good, thanks. The jump jet arrived at the airport before Longyear did. Jordan spent an anxious hour sitting in the terminal building's lobby, watching the main entrance, expecting a team of security agents to burst in at any moment. As he tensely waited, he kept asking himself, how can I reach Aditi? How is she? Where are they holding her? How can I get to her? The lobby was quiet, uncrowded. Only a few travelers were coming through it. Jordan paid no attention to the elderly, oversized Native American who entered the terminal, then stood just inside the main entrance, scanning the area with his hooded eyes. The man wore a nondescript plaid shirt, baggy work pants, scuffed boots, and a broad-brimmed black hat tilted back on his head. His face was copper red, his expression stony. After sweeping the lobby visually, the man walked straight toward Jordan, who rose to his feet uncertainly as the burly Native American approached. He's certainly not dressed like a security man, Jordan thought. But still...
Jordan Kell, the elderly man asked in a low rumble.
Yes?
I'm Paul Longyear's uncle. He's waiting for you outside in the pickup.
Jordan puffed out a relieved breath and started walking alongside the man. He was massive. Not fat, just large, solid, straining the clothes he wore. Jordan got the image of a retired athlete.
I didn't catch your name, Jordan said.
The man almost smiled.
I didn't give it. It's George Twelve Toes.
Twelve Toes?
All the men in my family are born with 6 toes on each foot.
That's unusual, said Jordan.
Not in my family.
Twelve Toes led Jordan out into the airport's parking lot. It was a warm and sunny day, dry with a soft breeze blowing. Off in a far corner of the lot, a battered old pickup truck was baking in the sunshine. As they approached it, Jordan recognized Paul Longyear sitting in its cab. Longyear stepped down onto the blacktop and extended his hand to Jordan.
Good to see you, Jordan, he said with a warm smile.
It's good of you to come all this way to pick me up, said Jordan.
The three men climbed into the truck, Twelve Toes behind the wheel, Longyear in the middle.
The electric motor made hardly any noise at all as they drove off the parking lot and followed the signs to the highway. Jordan went through his litany again as Longyear nodded, solemnly, listening. Twelvetoes said nothing and kept his eyes on the road.
"So what do you intend to do, Jordan?" Longyear asked as they accelerated onto the interstate.
"I need to get to the news media," said Jordan. "I need to tell the people about the Death Wave and the other civilizations that we've got to save."
For several moments, Longyear said nothing. He glanced at his uncle, who still stared straight ahead, then turned back to Jordan.
"That's about what we expected," Longyear said.
Before Jordan could reply, he went on. "Uncle George and I talked about the problem on our way to the airport to pick you up. We think you ought to stay with us on the reservation for the time being."
Jordan shook his head. "I appreciate the offer, but I need to get in contact with the major news media."
With a wry smile, Longyear said, "We don't live in teepees anymore, Jordan. We have our own holographic broadcasting station. They can make contact with the media networks for you."
"They can?"
Twelvetoes, without taking his eyes from the road, deadpanned, "Red man make heap big medicine. Big smoke signals." All three men broke into laughter.
In Barcelona, Gilda Nordquist dropped into the satellite surveillance center of the communications complex. The surveillance center always reminded her of what it must be like inside the head of a giant insect. Dozens of display screens lined the walls, making the place look like colossal multifaceted eyes.
"I only have a minute," she told the pouchy-faced operator on duty there. "I'm on my way to Cellini."
"Flying to the moon," the operator said. "Quel romantique!"
"You don't know the half of it," Nordquist said, smiling coldly.
"So what can I do for you, boss lady?"
"There's a big Indian reservation in North Dakota."
"A Native American," the operator said. "The Yanks haven't called them Indians for centuries, and there are several reservations in the state of North Dakota."
Ignoring the correction, Nordquist said,
"Find the one that Dr. Paul Longyear has squirreled himself in. Scan the area between it and the nearest major airport. Plus the reservation itself, of course."
"What am I supposed to be looking for?"
"Jordan Kell. His vitals are on file."
"He's the star traveler, isn't he?"
"That's right."
"And he's on an Indian reservation?"
Nordquist resisted the urge to throw the correction back at the operator. Instead, she said,
"Search also for Paul Longyear. He was also on the star mission, and his vitals are on file as well."
"Aren't everybody's?"
"Almost," Nordquist conceded. "We're working on adding the few we don't have yet."
"Kell and Longyear," the operator said.
24/7. I want to find them. Call me immediately when you do."
"On the moon?"
"Yes, immediately."
"You're sure Kell's out there?"
"I have a pretty strong hunch that he is, or will be sooner or later."
"What the hell's the star traveler doing out in the middle of nowhere?"
"That's what I want to find out," said Nordquist.